All right, guys, we have Christy Pressinger on, president and CEO of WG Content Strategy and Creation. Christy, how's it going?
Great, Landon. Thank you for having me.
Super excited to dive in here. Your journeys, we did some research on you, obviously, before this podcast, but I'd love you to kind of fill our listeners in on your journey over the last 20 plus years in your career and, you know, how it landed you into your role today.
Yeah, well, I started building the current organization, WG Content, back about 20 years ago. And it was at that time called Writer Girl. And so what I did at that point in time is I started bringing teams of writers to the healthcare ecosphere. I started with hospital systems, and now we work in the entire healthcare ecosphere. The interesting thing, you know, a lot of serendipitous things happened that led me to doing that. But what I can look back at now and see one of the reasons it was so successful is that when I was the one, just a solopreneur, building the business, going out and selling our services, when I was selling our services, I had to define what we were doing by explaining what we were not. Now, at the time, I didn't understand that. And I'm sure a lot of your listeners are savvier than me and they understand that. I didn't understand that until many years later, that the reason I had to do that is because we were building a new category. There weren't any organizations at that time that provided strictly content. We didn't do web design. We didn't do SEO. We didn't do any of the other things around it. We strictly did content for hospitals at that time. So that proved to be a very profitable and fortunately long-lived kind of thing, even though, as I said, we've expanded to the healthcare ecosphere as opposed to just hospital systems. We do payers, providers, and also agencies and other companies that serve the healthcare ecosphere. But that was very serendipitous, again, because it's a very narrow but very deep niche, and that has served us well. And I will say that to anybody who is building a business based on, you know, I bootstrapped the whole thing. So I never had any investment money, which I really, in my opinion, was great. And nobody could tell me what to do. I didn't want a job. The whole reason I was an entrepreneur was because I didn't want someone telling me what to do. And VC and PE money will absolutely tell you what to do. But what worked well about staying in that niche, the reason I did that, it was because I had been a freelance writer. And so people be like, oh, you should do user experience. You should do web development. You should do design, all these things. And I was like, no, because I don't understand those things. I understand content and I understand it deeply. And I really, at the time, I just didn't want to look stupid, but also I didn't want to sell things that I didn't fully understand because I could see that that could get you into trouble. And one of my main goals was always to make sure that we delivered on our promises. And if I started promising something that I didn't understand, we would very likely be unable to deliver on that. So that, in hindsight, again, turned out to be a very good decision.
Yeah. So what did the content look like for you guys back when you started? How has that content evolved? Maybe walk us through that.
Yeah. Well, like I said, the company was called Writer Girl, and it was strictly content, largely web content, you know, for hospitals. So long form. We've never done social media content. We are not content creators in that kind of term. But it was mainly, it started out with that. It was really just hospital websites were, you know, what was happening at the time, and it still happens a lot now, but there were a lot of mergers and acquisitions going on. And so these hospital systems had to rebrand. And so they had to merge all of their content onto one platform under one brand. So we would go in and work on all of that content for them. Very frequently, in one of our areas of expertise at that time and continues today, was the SME subject matter expert interviews that we do frequently with physicians. And, you know, it could be anybody from an oncologist to an orthopedic surgeon to a brain surgeon. And we excel at doing those interviews and speaking to these people who have very specific, deep knowledge in complicated topics. And then we do the alchemy of turning that content into anywhere from fifth to eighth grade reading level, depending on who the audience for the, if it's an academic medical system, it's usually a little higher reading level. If it's a hospital system, it's a lower reading level. So that was very much what it looked like at the time. As we grew and we expanded, we started offering more services, and hence the name change, which we just recently did the entire name change. Of course, we kept the WG, which sticks with Writer Girl. That's our legacy. And then added content strategy and creation, because one of our major offerings now is content strategy. And that's way at the beginning of the project, diving into their website, seeing what they need, doing the research on all of that, and helping them really understand what their content should be. And then the creation is everything from video to infographics to graphic design. Of course, we remain doing the content, physician bios, patient stories, all cut white papers, all sort of things like that. So we have a vast array of content services that we provide.
Love it. So I want to go back to 2004. I imagine if it's 20 years ago, roughly 2004, 2003, somewhere in that window, you mentioned that you were bootstrapping it. You were selling everything. You were building everything out. You were a one-person team at the time. I imagine your team has evolved since then. So I want to get into that. But I also want to talk about what it was like for you to have this vision and have this business you're creating, but then also have to go sell it and build sales skills. Maybe you had those skills from previous experiences, maybe not. I just would love you to talk what those initial first couple of years were like when you were in startup mode, having to really build out your identity and as an owner and a visionary and all that stuff.
Well, at the time, I was married and I was the sole breadwinner and I had a young son. He was like 3 years old at the time. So, you know, as anybody knows, you're the sole breadwinner. You just got to get, you got to get the money coming, right? So, and especially if you're building a business, I'm sure your audience knows this, that you wear all the hats, right? So you're the salesperson, you're the CEO, you're the CFO, you're actually project managing things. For a period of time, I was still writing, but that was the first thing to drop away because that was one of the easier things to replace. But it was challenging, you know, it was definitely challenging. I never had some big long-term vision of this becoming the multi-million dollar company that it is now. I kind of don't work that way, but I did believe in this organization. And then as I started adding people, and first of all, I want to back up. One of the things that I said when I first started building the business, I said to my accountant at the time, if I can't build a business based on kindness, then I'll go back to being a freelance writer. So that became kind of a through line. Although, again, as I just said, when you're busy building a business, you're not thinking a whole lot about kindness and stuff, right? But that's very much, again, I can look back at it and say that is kind of who I am in my DNA through all of the experiences that have created me. And so what happened is that as I was growing it, probably about 4 or 5 years ago, we were working with consultants. And the first thing they did was survey all of our employees to see what was the core of our business, the thing without which we would not survive. And it ended up that it was our culture. And I thought that was very interesting because I think it's almost counterintuitive. A lot of businesses would think that culture is not, you know, doesn't contribute to the bottom line, isn't revenue generating, but in my experience, it is. And as I pondered that, I had an epiphany that of course I look at my balance sheet. You have to look at your balance sheet and you have to know what your net income is, your EBITDA and all of that. But I hold my cultural balance sheet to be equally important. And so to that end, I'm the author of the upcoming book, Your Cultural Balance Sheet, Strategies for Creating an Environment Where People Can Thrive. We're hoping that'll be published this summer. But so what happened as I did this, as I was building it, I definitely had that through line of kindness, which also went to, I wanted to be everyone's favorite vendor, meaning all the contractors that I was working with at the time. And I also wanted to be everybody's favorite client. So it was like, okay, what does that look like without being, you know, without being stepped on, right? And so over time, as we grow, you start thinking, okay, well, you know, boundaries are helpful. So you learn how to teach your team about the importance at the first engagement with a client of saying, this is how we like to work. Can I have your permission that that's okay with you? And, you know, all those kind of things so that you don't end up being, you know, stepped on by everybody. But at the same time, what happens with that kind of work is that you're building a relationship with your clients. And out of that grew our mission statement, which is building relationships one word at a time. And so we use that as a through line along with our values of we are empowered, curious, kind, and fun. And so all of those things really define who WG Content is. And yes, of course, the people that work in the business daily are deeply entrenched in the myriad services we offer, and they excel at those. They're extraordinary at what they do. but the whole culture around it allows it to grow, allows our clients to be repeat clients. We have a very high percentage of repeat client business. And they say that one of the reasons they keep coming back to us, of course, the work is excellent, but there are other organizations now that provide content, but we are not transactional. And one of the other things that I did from the beginning was, and I think that for many entrepreneurs, it can be kind of a fallback position to think that you know better because you're serving the client. And so you think, well, I know better than them. And you can have a little bit of an arrogance there, which is not well received in my experience. And so the way that we approach things, I've always said, I never was that person who was going to go in and be like, oh, look, you're doing everything wrong. You got to do this. What we always do is that the adage of seek first to understand and then be understood. So I always say that we don't know the sandbox in which you are playing, but we will jump in there with you and seek to understand that sandbox and then help you solve whatever content strategy or content creation issues you're facing. And because of that, our clients feel understood and they like working with us because while it may not be ideal, maybe there is a better way to do something, but they have strictures on that. And we understand that and say, okay, well, let's meet you where you are and let's fix what we can the best way that we can from where we stand right now.
Love it. I love it. So you talked a little bit about the team, about the culture of your organization. I definitely wanted to get into that. So how did your team evolve over time? What are some things you did really well, some things you learned from along the way of building your team? How do you initially translate your vision to your team early on and get them to buy in and get them to truly replace yourself in roles that and basically taking hats off that you had and putting them on someone else? Like, how did you go about growing your team? And then obviously maybe talk a little bit about the size of your team today and kind of the best practices on scaling internally.
Yeah, I would say that I say this a lot. Back a long time ago, I had a coach who said to me, your company is you and you are your company and it won't grow until you do. The importance of self-awareness and personal development, it cannot be overestimated. It is key to everything. Now, that said, it is entirely possible to build a huge organization without any self-awareness at all. I mean, absolutely, you can do that. But
totally.
That is not the way I chose to do it. And so I spent a lot of time learning to understand myself and to see, you know, where I need to moderate my behavior as a leader in order to get the best out of my team. To moderate my behavior, boy, there's a lot of things. How much time you got? What I actually learned is I was introduced to the Enneagram, which is a personality typing system, but it's actually the reason I like it. There's many of them out there, but the reason I like the Enneagram is it looks at the motivation for your behavior as opposed to the behavior. Because many people behave in similar ways. We could be very driven, like two different personality types on the Enneagram, both can look a lot alike, but the reason they do it is vastly different. And if you can understand your own motivation first, that's good. And then you can also see the low side of that, like, oh, that maybe not as good. Like for me, my motivation as my type is that I need everybody to be okay. And so what happens there is that I can become delusional. I can move really fast. I can ignore the downside of things. And that can be very off-putting for people. Because if you ignore the downside of things, like the team that you're working with, you are basically dismissing their experience if they're going through something challenging. So I had to learn to moderate that, to slow myself down somewhat. And by learning, everybody in our organization is typed in the Enneagram, and we do full day workshops on this. We do lunch and learns. Everybody gets a book about it. So it's very much part of the DNA of our organization. And so what I found is that people learn their own type, but they also learn about their coworkers' types. And what happens when you learn that and you start looking at the motivation for someone's behavior, it lays the groundwork for radical empathy. And that becomes part of your culture then, as opposed to being like, they're doing that to drive me crazy. You say, oh, okay, I get it. That person processes more slowly and also tends to wait for the next shoe to drop. So they're overly cautious, whereas I tend to be very okay with risk. They're very risk averse. So how can we meet in the middle here? And so it really almost makes for no conflict. Not that there's never conflict, but because you're coming from a different place. And that's been huge in growing the organization. So in terms of how we grew people, as I said, it was more about me working on my self-awareness. And then in my experience, people are attracted to that kind of person. You know how, you know, sort of like when you're, even if you're dating or friends, you're like, wow, I really get along with that person. I want to be friends. I want to have coffee with them. And that's very much what happened with this organization. And then it was furthered because I always say we engineer the structures and the processes to allow for the magic of the weaving of the tapestry. So everybody gets, you know, the workshop, they get typed, they get all these different kinds of things, but then they have the magic of weaving the tapestry of the culture. And then they bring their previous coworkers or their friends to the organization, or some of the contractors that we work with around the country are like, wow, I'd really like to be full time. You know, can I join you? So that is very much organically how it happened. Not that we never recruit, but we don't have to spend a whole lot of time recruiting.
Something that, you know, I noticed through you just listening to you now and through my own research is you guys have a unique approach towards just the development track for your employees, right? You guys have an annual personal development budget for your team. Mm-hmm. I was going to ask about what the inspiration was, but you kind of filled some of those gaps a good bit. I don't know if you want to add more to that, but I think that's something that we're going to see more and more organizations implement.
We've been doing that for many years. In fact, we have unlimited time off, and I started that when I was still worried about making payroll, when it was like keeping me up at night. And the reason I did it is I had read about some company, I can't remember who it was, in Fast Company. It was kind of an unheard of thing at the time. And I was like, oh, I want to do that. And of course, fast forward to today, a lot of companies do it because the data show that if you give people unlimited time off, they'll actually take less time off, which was never my motivation for it. It was always like, look, you're grown up. And if you get your work done and the output is there, and as long as you make sure your team knows what's happening and you're not leaving in the middle of something big and leaving somebody high and dry, I don't care what you do. Take your time off. It's your time. Go do what you want to do. And certainly don't ask permission to go to the doctor or to pick up your kids from school. So that was very much that. And then the personal development money is, again, in my experience, I'm sure you probably heard of the book, There's No Such Thing as Business Ethics, because there's just ethics. It's the same thing as there's no such thing as professional development. There's just development. And we call it personal development on purpose because it doesn't matter to me what they do with it. They can, you know, take a painting class. One employee bought a bicycle. You know, somebody else took a writing workshop. They can do whatever they want with it. The point is that we put attention on development so that you're growing and changing and you're looking for new things to do, whatever those might be, you know, whether it's within the purview of the task you perform at WG Content or if it's outside of it, it doesn't matter because the whole being is what we want you to feel comfortable bringing to your workday.
I love it. I selfishly want to dive a little deeper in all this because one thing to say about the cultural, like we do the culture index. Mm-hmm. That's what we've been doing for the last year and change. And one of the things that helped with me and my business partner and even our staff and our team was just eliminate what it really does is when you understand the why behind someone and who they are, it eliminates a lot of the resentment you may have had for inefficiencies mm-hmm. that you were perceiving. Mm-hmm. When you understand the why below the surface, it's like, okay, great. Maybe this person's in the wrong seat and that's why this friction is here.
Correct.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, get them in the bus, then make sure they're in the right seat.
Yeah, totally. Totally. So that's awesome. As far as the unlimited time off, this is something that's super interesting to me. Have you had any issues with that? Have you had any issues with, you know, like if it's just unlimited time off, have you had any issues with, you know, maybe the wrong hire taking advantage or people like not, you know, putting in their fair share? Like, I'm just curious to know if you've had any downfalls to the positive sides that statistics show.
You know, it's really funny because we've always been virtual because I never wanted an office because I didn't want to have to go there. And so this whole business has been built virtually. And I obviously know from experience, you can build a really tight culture even virtually. But what I've had people say to me before, like even pre-COVID, because after COVID, things have changed. Obviously, people are like, well, gosh, if you don't have an office, how do you know people are working? I'm like, well, then you have a hiring problem. You need to go back. Mm. You know, it's not about the work. So you got to be really, I'm sure you've heard slow to hire, quick to fire, right? You just have to be very cautious about who you bring into your circle, right? And as a result of that, we have had very, very little turnover, which is one of the benefits of having a cultural balance sheet, is because turnover is a hidden cost on your balance sheet. But boy, it's a big one when it comes to your culture. And we've had very little turnover. And most of the people that leave our organization definitely stay in touch and frequently come back. We just have someone who is a contractor with us for many years. She left a while back because she needed a full-time job. She had kids going to college and stuff. And then she recently saw that we actually promoted from within. We had interviews and promoted someone. And so we had a vacancy in a project management spot. And she saw that we were looking for that and reached back out and was like, gosh, I would love to do that. And the great thing is she's coming in and working with a client she worked with about 8 years ago. So she's already very familiar with that. So to answer your question succinctly, no, we have not had issue with that. But again, I can't imagine how we would. We're cautious in who we bring in. And like I said before, many people have known each other and have come that way. Or we've had some ancillary way of knowing them, either working as a contractor or something like that. And not to say that we haven't found people completely blindly, we have, and they've been pretty good too, because we have, again, engineered process and systems for recruiting and things we put people through to ensure that they're most importantly going to be a culture fit. And even when if we hire someone, say from a corporate environment, that's different from Writer from WG Content, we just changed it. But so on our calendar, like we have a shared calendar, but we would never, ever just go in on someone's calendar and schedule a meeting just because it has free time. So someone recently, I mean, a couple of years ago, somebody who was new did that. And what the person who had been here longer did very kindly, in keeping with our values, said, hey, I understand what you're doing, but that's not how we do things here. Before we schedule a meeting on someone's calendar, we always just reach out real quick and say, hey, looks like you're open here. You know, can we schedule a meeting? Because just because I don't have something on there doesn't mean I'm not scheduled or busy. You know, so we kindly, gently teach each other how we like to work and protect it in that way.
So you mentioned the cultural balance sheet and kind of, I look at, you have culture and then you have sales, right? Like it's like, there's always this push and pull of like, we've seen a handful of our own clients, our business owner clients and partnerships where one person's heavy on the KPIs, heavy on the sales, heavy on the new opportunities. And one is more of like the internal visionary that focuses on culture and bringing in the right talent. Could you talk about the balance of that as you've continued to grow as a business and, you know, still obviously, you know, new opportunities, fostering current relationships, retaining clients, client acquisition and retention is huge, but then also your culture, like, can you just talk about the integration or the balance between those two?
Yeah. I don't see a conflict there, but I'm also a sole owner and I like that because then I don't have to worry about, you know, balancing anything with anybody else. Now I do have a leadership team that, they've very long tenured employees. I think the longest is 13 years, then 12 years, then 10 years and 9 years. So they've been around a long time. And so I do definitely seek their input and whatnot. And two of those people are business development, right? But both of them are in line with our culture. And there was one, we've had clients before. It's like, I don't think they're a fit. Like they're not a cultural fit. I don't care how much this is going to bring in. From day one, the 13-year employee was my first salesperson. And if we wouldn't land a piece of business at the time, I would say, you know what, that is just leaving space for somebody who's going to appreciate what we offer. And so I have very much imbued these people with that belief, you know, and I'm not hesitant. I mean, I think most people are not hesitant to fire clients. There was someone a while back that was a West Coast client. We're on the East Coast. And this group was just kind of challenging to the project manager, who's a really lovely person and very accommodating, probably to a fault. And they were really kind of mistreating her. And I didn't know about it because I was too far away from it. And then I found out about something. What happened is they made a phone call to her after hours. She picked up the phone, or actually her son picked up the phone, and they started grilling her on the project. And it was like 7:30 in the evening, and she was not in that headspace. And she was kind of trying to answer the question and kind of stumbling around. And she felt really bad that she couldn't answer this question. And then the client said, oh, by the way, you're on speaker. There's like 10 of us here. I mean, when I heard that, I was like, oh, excuse me, but hell to the no. I'm not going to allow some kid in California to destroy what I've worked 10 years to build. So I called the person's boss. I didn't know her. She didn't know me. And I said, you know, we just can't here to delight you, you know, and our values are we're empowered, curious, kind, and fun, and none of that is happening here. And she was kind of like, well, okay, going forward. And I was like, oh no, there's no going forward. And she kind of freaked out and then went and spoke to her team. And the project manager told me later, she said, well, they still have the same problems. They just don't take it out on me anymore. And I was like, okay, that's fine. I don't care. Have your own problems. There just do not bring them into our organization, you know?
100%. Yeah. The one big lesson we've learned in the last few years is saying no to the wrong client is saying yes to the right client at some point in the future.
Yep.
And making sure you're controlling that power frame in the relationship to some level is important, you know?
Well, I think to your point too, especially as you're building and you want that revenue, you're like, oh my God, I need the sale. As frightening as it can be, especially if you have payroll, to not take a sale, that's where you as the entrepreneur have to be comfortable with risk and believe in yourself to say, you know what? My gut is telling me not to do this. Don't do that and figure it out some other way. You know, I have so many entrepreneurial friends and we all have said, my God, how many times have I stayed up late at night working about payroll? I never had to, but a friend was like, yeah, I used credit cards a couple times to pay payroll, you know, before I could get it, get it back. So, you know, it's really, that's the role. That's why you're the entrepreneur, you're the business owner, is because you're comfortable doing that, you know, and balancing that. But also, I don't know any entrepreneur who doesn't think at some point, I'm going to make a really bad decision, destroy everybody's life, and end up living in a trailer by the river, if I'm lucky. You know, it's like, so it's that balance of, you know, okay, am I doing this right? You know, so that's the value of having a team of entrepreneurs around you, which kind of an aside, but for any of your people who are entrepreneurs, they should look up Entrepreneurs Organization. It's also informally known as EO. It is a member-led organization, so nobody is paid in the organization. And that changed my life when I found that group. I think I've been a member 8 or 9 years. And so it's all entrepreneurs, revenue of $1 million or more. And the experience share you get from that will really move your business forward if you're not, you know, if you're not aware of it yet.
That's awesome. So to kind of zoom out of business and kind of bridge over to you as the individual, like, you know, being at your caliber, as far along as you are, you know, lifelong learning, lifelong growth, all these things that matter for the founder, right? So how have you personally embraced that kind of principle through your career? Would you maybe share a learning experience that significantly impacted your path or anything like that?
Well, I will say that when that coach said to me, your business is you and you are your business and it won't grow until you do, what I did at that time, which some people might find surprising, is I actually started a daily meditation practice. And I would get up every morning and before I did anything, I would meditate for 10 or 15 minutes. And then I would read personal development books with an eye towards self-awareness. They were sometimes more spiritual books. I mean, obviously I've read business books too, but that's not my inclination. My inclination is to go towards more personal development, self-awareness. And that has made all the difference in my life and in my work. And I think like most people, I'm not a Buddhist, so I go in and out of my meditation practice, you know, and the funny thing is that in our organization, any meeting that has more than three people starts with a meditation. That's part of our practice, which I think is hilarious since I go through stages where I haven't meditated for months, you know, but they all do. And, but it's really, it's a great way to start a practice like that for the group is because, you know, we all come into meetings scattered and things, and that way it kind of centers you and you can be present for the work going on in that meeting. So, I find myself, you know, given the world in which we live in right now, it's rather chaotic and uncertain and lots of things going on. I find myself going back to my meditation practice because otherwise I can just get into probably not a very positive headspace and I don't enjoy that. So I go back to the meditation practice. I go back to really slowing myself down first thing in the morning, really allowing myself to focus, not checking email first thing, not checking a news feed first thing. And then going and doing some reading that at right now is a little more spiritual. I'm actually reading Deepak Chopra's latest book, which I'm really enjoying. So that for me is where I get my center so that then I can lead from a centered place as opposed to a hamster wheel. That now when you're building your business, frequently you are on a hamster wheel, and that makes that meditation practice even more important because nobody wants to see the leader running around like a chicken with their head cut off. That makes people nervous. They don't want the leader to look nervous. So finding a way to really center yourself and calm yourself. I used to say back when I was more involved in the business, like a duck, you're going across the surface of the water and it looks like you're not doing anything, but you're kicking like crazy.
Yeah,
exactly. So kind of figuring out how to do that, because, you know, I was just telling an employee, the one who got promoted, about the story about, you know, we all entrepreneurs always worry that we're going to end up in a trailer by the river. And she was shocked. She's like, oh my gosh, we just think you have it all together. And I'm like, oh no, I'm terrified every day. I just like, you know, I just figure it out. And, you know, and I believe in you guys. And we have this great system set up in these processes in this structure. So it's way bigger than me now. You know, it's unlikely that I would make a decision that would in any way, you know, cause any problem to our business, you know, at this point. But it doesn't mean that I don't still think, oh my God, I could screw it all up and ruin everybody's life, you know, but that's unlikely at this point.
No, 100%. So what's the vision? Where do you see everything going? What does success look like for you 5, 10+ years from now?
Yeah, for me, I have no exit strategy at this point. And the one thing I do know through working through with my forum in Entrepreneurs Organization, I was like, should I build this to sell it? And working with these people who knew me very well, it's a very, it's called a forum and it's a very focused group of people that really know each other. There's a lot of best practices around vulnerability and confidentiality and so on. So these people knew me very well, and it's not a friendship group. It's very much this group. So I worked through that with them. And it was great because they were able to reveal to me that all of them said, I see a passion for building it, but I do not see a passion for selling it. And what was revealed through that work with them for me was that if I sold this business and walked away with tons of money, but the culture fell apart, I would consider it the largest failure of my life. So that's not my exit strategy. Don't know what it is, but right now what I do as a leader is just think, and I don't plan on stopping that anytime soon. So I keep doing that. And for me, the daily work is, I think a lot, I think about culture all the time. I mean, you know, obviously I'm in on decisions. We just redid our tech stack and did a big six-figure investment in that. And of course, I know what's happening there. But I also listen to people talking about it. I'm like, wait a minute, have we gone too far? Are we affecting the joy that people have in their work? Did we come up with a tech solution for a relationship organization? You know, so I ask those kind of questions and think, okay, how do I further the well-being of the people that work for WG Content? What structures can I engineer? For example, a new one that I just am implementing is everybody take a 10-minute break every 50 minutes of their workday. So that's basically giving everybody almost an hour and a half of unproductive time. I want them to step away from their devices, all of them, go for a walk, you know, throw in a load of wash, I don't care, do whatever you want, but step away. Because in my experience, creativity and innovation happens in the spaces, not in the back-to-back-to-back meetings, which is obviously an easily done downfall when you are a virtual organization. So that's where we're implementing that. Now, I don't expect it to be perfect. I'm like, if you can do it 3 times a day to start, that's great. Just kind of get yourself in this new habit so that you allow space for the creativity and the innovation and all of that. In terms of the vision, the reason that I want to grow is because I want to share this culture with more people. I want to reinvent the way people look at the world of work. And I love the fact that the children of our employees see how their parents are treated, and then they have a higher expectation for their workplace, you know, so that they won't go and be a cog in the wheel or, you know, be told, well, you know, work comes before everything else, because that's not true. So that's sort of what my thinking always is around that. I have a couple other ideas for ancillary businesses, but in terms of WG Content, along with the rebrand, is that with that bigger name and highlighting all of the services that we offer, we can move into another vertical market. What that vertical market is, I don't know exactly yet. We're still kind of exploring that and figuring out there's a lot of places we could go with that. I would imagine we will at some point. That probably will come more from my leadership team because they're closer to the market than I am. Although as the visionary and as your audience knows, and probably you know, frequently you as the visionary already know where you're going. And it's very easy to just tell people that. And it's faster. Like it's always faster to be a general than it is to be someone who holds space for other people to reveal their awareness and their knowledge, right? It's much easier to give orders than it is to be like, well, tell me more. What do you think? It takes time to do that, which then makes the pace somewhat slower, but also richer. You know, it's much better. I've never been a general anyway, but that doesn't resonate with me. It resonates with me that we hold the space for people to take the time to process, to be like, you know, I think this might be a good idea, and to let people, you know, come to what you think already, or you might already know as the entrepreneur, where you're going to go. But you want to let everybody come along and get there with you, as opposed to just dragging them with you. You want to go together. It makes it much stronger.
And there's something in the book, Dan Martell, of the Buy Back Your Time. I don't know if you've heard of that book before.
No, I haven't.
But he talks about transformational leadership versus transactional leadership. Transactional leadership is when I'm like, hey, Christy, please go get this done and do it exactly this way.
Right.
Versus transformational leadership is like me saying, hey, this is the vision. This is what I'd like to accomplish. And then allowing you to have the freedom to figure out how to accomplish that, and stepping right away and allowing your team to really, you know, give them the vision, sell them on the vision, and then give them the freedom to be innovative and grow and move in that direction, whatever that direction is.
Yeah.
That's just what I connect to with your words. So that was awesome.
Same too, Linda. I wanted to add this because I have heard this a lot from entrepreneurs, and because, you know, entrepreneurs come with a particular skill set. I came in with the skill set of I could sell, I could write, I could project manage, but I didn't want to be the best at those because then I would have a job. So when I hired my first salesperson, I had just landed our first pretty big six-figure client, and I gave that to her along with the commission. And then she worked it and she earned that by building a relationship and all of that. But I wanted to set her up for success. I didn't compete with her. I didn't hold on to that. And I taught her what I knew and then said, now go do it better. And that's what I do when I coach younger businesses too. I'm like, I will share the myriad mistakes I've made because Lord knows they are legion, because I want you to go break it in a brand new way. Do it better than I did. Do it better and do it faster and do it bigger. You know, I have no skin in the game about you doing something better than me. I think that's great. That's how the world gets better, right? It's not about me. It's about how can we collectively do these things better.
True egoless leadership. That's great.
Yeah.
That's the truth.
Which comes from a huge failure, by the way. I mean, I ran it off the rails so many years ago that it taught me, you might want some counselors around you because you could run things off the rail if you're not careful. So, you know, there's a balance there, humility, you know, being humbled, and then, you know, all of that.
No, 100%. So as we near the wrap up point, a question we always like to ask our guests, and this podcast is called the Consistency Wins Podcast. So a little bit of a corny question, but we always like to ask our guests this question is, what does consistency mean to you? How do you see it show up in your life? Just define the word consistency in your eyes.
You know, mine is probably a little bit different. And I speak about this a lot in support of the book, is that I talk about, you know, obviously the culture and what that means. And it's all about letting people know that they matter and that positions are replaceable, but people are not. But people don't believe that when they first come to work for you. They're like, yeah, right. Everybody says that. So what I say is that trust is a long game, and you have to say what you mean and mean what you say, because it's a long game, you can lose it in a split second. So for me, consistency is more around the softer skills, as opposed to having a consistent workout routine or even a meditation practice. Those are all important things. But for me, the consistency is being really bringing your true authentic self, leading with vulnerability, leading with kindness, leading with radical empathy, because that's what I want to see them do in the people they affect. But if they don't see me doing it, then they're not going to do that. So I have to be consistent in those soft skills over time, regardless of what is going on in the business. You know, whether we've lost a big piece of business or whether we have something challenging going on or whatever's happening, that I still need to behave in that manner. Because if I all of a sudden, you know, do something that breaks somebody's trust, you might never get it back. So for me, consistency is meaning what you say and saying what you mean.
Love it. I love it. How can I and my team and also our listeners? Like, how can we follow your journey? How can we connect with you? I'm really excited for the Cultural Balance Sheet. I'm going to be buying a couple of copies of that and getting into that. But how can we stay in touch with you? How can we follow your journey so that when that book comes out, I can go buy it? But then also just interact if anyone wants to reach out or connect with your team for any.
Definitely LinkedIn is the best place to find me. And I'm just Christy Pretzinger on LinkedIn, easy to find. And also you can reach me directly, Christy@WGContent.com. I'm always respond if I get someone asking me a question. I do have a website for the book, which frankly I haven't populated yet because my marketing team is going to do that for me. And they have been up to their ears in what has just been our rebrand. So that will be coming soon. But also on LinkedIn, there are places because I'm on a lot of blogs like this one where I'm talking about, you know, various aspects of culture and business building and all of that kind of stuff. And so you can listen to me on any of those as well.
Love it. Love it. Well, Christy, this has been awesome. Super awesome. I know we were supposed to go a half hour. We had to go over a little bit. I just extracting so much value. We really appreciate you coming on. We're probably going to have to do a part two at some point in the next 6 to 8 months. Maybe after the book comes out.
That'd be great. I would love that.
It's rock and roll. All right. We'll talk soon.
Thanks so much.